The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Show with KJ Carson on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
Came out of the seventh and struck out the pitch.
Line drive into left field. Duran to his right. He's there. He makes the play. Red Sox win the game and the series. It's a 4-2 homestand and maybe a haymaker to the Toronto Blue Jays. Ranger Suarez returns on a day the Red Sox make a big trade. Big days from Rahula and Duran, and the Red Sox just keep on rolling. 6-1 the final at Fenway.
KJ Show Red Sox Review here on WEEI, 617-779-7937. This team continues to roll. Six straight series won. They win today 6-1. I'll get to the big story of Connolly early trade for Curtis Meade. That's coming up. But just hats off to this team. If I thought the streak was going to end, they would be able to sweep Baltimore. I didn't just want to say it out loud. I thought they would lose somewhere in this Toronto series. But the bigger story is that not only did this team have just an unbelievable run with the 15 straight games, but went on to proceed to win those series. And now going on their way to Sacramento, wherever they are, somewhere in the West Coast. This is where I can start getting into the conversation of we might be able to see another sweep of a series before we potentially see a loss of a series when they face the Dodgers before they come back home. So, again, where this team is right now, I think they're poised to probably win the ALCS. And you're like, KJ, you're crazy. Why is this? Is because you look around the American League, there's really only one team that plays big ball, which would be the Yankees. But if you're like, well, you have the Yankees number, and you've seen what you've been able to do to Tampa, you also swept the White Sox. So now you're talking about, hey, if the Red Sox continue to be the best small ball team, it's one of those like styles win fights type of situations where you're like, hey, could the Red Sox play better small ball than Tampa? Absolutely. What if that's the only thing in their way? What if the Yankees struggle with the bats? So the Red Sox are putting him in a position where even with the trade deadline still down the road and Craig Breslow obviously in buy mode, it doesn't now require, to me, that you have to go get another big thumping bat to suddenly say this team needs power. No, this team needs to stay disciplined. And that's what you hadn't seen from the team over the last several years. This is the most discipline I've seen the Red Sox play ball over a course of, let's just say, an entire month over the last couple of years. 617-779-7937. Again, Red Sox win 6-1. 8-2 in their last 10. Now clearly in the number two spot in the wild card. I guess really the question would be, is do the Yankees recover? Do the Tampa Bay Rays? They've got their footing back after their series. They've won three in a row. So, you know, the Yankees are kind of hot right now. So it's incumbent for the Red Sox to go into Sacramento and try and get a sweep out of this A series before you get to that Dodgers series. Because now you get to that Dodgers series, unless you come off of a sweep, you've won, it would be seven straight series in a row. Could you now be in the conversation of, hey, this Dodgers-Red Sox series may be a preview of the World Series? I know I might be getting ahead of myself, but again, if you're one of those that just looks at run differential of who's going to be in the mix of things, it's Tampa, it's Chicago, it's the Yankees, it's the Red Sox. Virtually everybody else are negatives. So can the Red Sox continue to play the pick and poke and pick and poke? I think they can. I can't see what tells me that they cannot. Look, I know whatever feelings you may have had about Breslow, if you're still hanging on to those old feelings, I think you're really making it more about yourself and the narrative that you may be trying to achieve than really coming to the realization that this guy has done something very well, very quickly, and you feel confident that this could stay. So when you go and get someone like Curtis Mead, and the word is that he's going to start out playing second, according to Breslow, that does kind of address if you're worried about Sigler starting to get into a little bit of a slump. You give Romy Gonzalez a little more time to get his bearings back and be able to contribute. This is such a smart play. I know people don't want to see Early go, but I'll say this. Did you know when Early was going to come back and pitch? And did you believe that he was going to get his standing back? Some of that stuff was starting to fade a little bit. That was the injury kind of tied to, hey, you know, this is what happens to some of the young arms. There's no room for recovery for that, right? So if you're like, hey, you're not going to deal Early, but Early's going to be sitting on the bench for a little longer trying to recover, could you have not gotten something in return? And I think that's where you're hearing Breslow saying that it's no longer about winning the trade, it's about bettering the team. And so I think a lot of fans are kind of in the win the trade thinking, where you're like, okay, what is available right now to help us with what we need right now? So you can get into the semantics of Mead was at one time a DFA player and all these other things like this. I think what Breslow is saying is, here's a guy that's on his thing right now. Can we get a guy on his thing right now, give him better dimensions like with Fenway, give him a chance to be hidden inside of a lineup where, hey, do you put him behind Contreras? I was one that said a long time ago that Rafaela, Zatko, you might remember, who's running back and forth today, that at one point I was just like, I could see Rafaela being a number two hitter if he slows down on hitting at first pitches. That's just exactly what Will Middlebrooks talked to him about. So guys are stepping into their roles. So when a guy like Curtis Mead comes in, you're not like, oh, we need you to hit these home runs. We need you. Maybe you're the one that protects Contreras. Maybe you get put behind Contreras. Maybe you get put behind Abreu or in front of Abreu, so that way Abreu can get back into his groove of things. So this is why you go get those little pieces where I was one that said, yeah, maybe you need a DH bat. Maybe that's still something you do. Where is Roman Anthony? Is there room for him to come back? I think you would know if Roman Anthony is on his way back is if Duran or Yoshida gets dealt. 617-779-7937. KJ Show. We'll get into just some of the fascinating stuff that came out of Jason Tatum's mouth yesterday. Plus, Patriots camp is underway. Day two. A big signing has already occurred in that regard. What's up with the Gonzalez contract and Kraft's words? So that's still to come here on WEEI. So again, Red Sox win 6-1. And I'll tell you what, in about 4 or 5 minutes, we'll hear from Chad Tracy. But again, I'm really impressed that Breslow has clearly stated that this team are buyers and they're buyers early. And why that's important is because now you know that the Red Sox are dealing. And I think by dealing early right away, some people are like, well, why didn't you do Duran or Cassis or other things? Well, because those guys have not produced themselves to show it. They have nothing on tape. They really don't. And plus, these guys are not available. So if there are these other teams, they're going to be like, well, hey, look what the Red Sox are doing. These are things that we could potentially do with our rosters here in the next couple of years. We don't want to take on guys that have a lot of potential, and potential is such a dangerous word, who have just not shown up. So, yeah, if you're the Nationals, you might say, okay, even though we're in the mix of some things, this is a guy that we did kind of pick up off of the scrap heap, and we feel like we can get a pitcher for the future. And here with the Red Sox, you would have to say, okay, just look at the starting lineup. Where does Connelly Early fit in the picture of things right now? Because the team is a right now team, and that's different than if you had the conversation. If you knew that 6 weeks ago that Connelly Early was going to be traded, you would be ready to Breslow right to the dumpster immediately. But today, it's a different team. It's a different situation. Paul in Westfield, thanks so much for calling the KJ Show. Sox win 6-1. Your thoughts, my man?
KJ, what we have here is you're making simple common sense. And the fact about the Yankees and how we swept in Chicago, beat them up at home, which no one did, this isn't just a little difference. This is a huge difference. A huge difference from KJ. How do you go from under 14 to 4 over? I don't think that's ever been done in that short of a time.
Maybe on and a golf course where you're picking up your ball and breakfast ball every hole. You jump on a par like that.
Yes, that's standard operating procedure, but that's Congress and that's Washington. But we don't do that. But what we do is the new guy we got for Connelly Early with 48 RBIs and I think 18 home runs. Like the guy said, the next 6 to 8 games, right-handed hitter friendly, this could be that little boost, which the other teams are going, oh, Christ, this is like LeBron going to Philly. Oh, that did happen. I mean, this is madness, mayhem, cats and dogs. This is wicked. And enjoy it, because it can only get better if they continue to use the formula. If it isn't broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call, Paul. Always good to hear from you. Yeah, at one time, the Red Sox were 15.5 games behind, and that was June 24th. 7.5 now, depending on what happens in this Yankee game. The Yankees are tied in that. They're tied with what? Jeez, this is. Yeah, the Sox are 16-3 in the month of July, and haven't scored 100 runs. 17-3 now. So in the last 20 games, they're playing just about 900 baseball. They played 423 in April, 481 in May, 462 in June. It's a totally different theme. And so instead of going to get and play a little revisionist history, when Kyle Schwarber was obtained, he was on the IL for the Cubs at the time. He was going to have to learn a little bit of first. He was going to have to get healthy before he came in. You know, Kyle Schwarber would end up becoming Kyle Schwarber through the energy here. But maybe that's the idea of going to get Curtis Meade, right? Because if he gets that energy that Fenway now has, like you're now, like this song doesn't sound bad. This is so different. I'm still going to cut it off. But it doesn't, everything has changed. And that's what's fascinating. And so if Curtis Meade is a guy that comes in and is able to find a niche for himself in the lineup where he's driving in runs, where it's a second and third and he's getting a critical hit off of the wall because that's his strength right there. Now you're talking about not having to give up everything to get just what you need for right now. 617-779-7937. We'll hear from Chad Tracy next. It's KJ Show, Red Sox Review. Red Sox win 6-1. They take the series from Toronto here on WEEI.
This is the KJ Show with KJ Carson on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
KJ Show on WEEI, Red Sox Review. They win 6-1. They win the series against Toronto. They have now won 6 series in a row. The Red Sox are now 54-50. That sounds absolutely crazy. 54-50. You know what it was a month ago at this time? What, call it June 25th? Good gosh. 33-46. These fools have lost 4 games in a month. They used to be able to do it in a series. This is absolutely fascinating. And you're not talking about a team that's been hitting 300 over that time. They're not scoring 160 runs in the last month. No, they've scored like 100 runs. Today, they've scored 100 runs in a month. In July. Right, like, so it's almost like it looks as bad as it did before. It's just that they're winning in between the raindrops. I like to use that term. It's like, hey, they don't have these guys like outside of the Wilbur Abreu experience from a couple series ago. You don't have guys that are just bringing thunder outside of Wilson Contreras, right? But this isn't your classic bopper team where here's the big bopper one and here's number two and all these other guys. No, it's just kind of like, who is the guy for today? But you have to really give a lot of credit to Chad Tracy of saying, look, let's play into these guys' strengths and what it should be. This team over the last several years has been the attempt has been build it around speed, pitching, defense. Breslow's gotten the pitching correct. The defense has gotten better, and now the smart plate appearances are starting to show up. Sedan Rafael, right? This was a guy that people were like, oh, he's a 235 hitter, 250. Now he's a 280 hitter. So now you're saying, we might be seeing something of a five-tool guy, minus maybe with the power over time, just as the eye gets better, the contact gets better. So you're now starting to see things in place. And on top of that, during this whole streak, it's been a bunch of guys getting it done that have not been the highly touted prospects. I mean, for God's sakes, they're showing the Stephen A. Smith Car Shield commercial. They're not even showing Marcelo Myers one anymore. It's a change, and it starts with, and I really believe it's Chad Tracy just saying, I'm going to play the guys who are here that want to play, who love the game of baseball more than love what baseball can do for them. So here's postgame from Chad Tracy.
Chad, for a guy who hadn't pitched in a while, right? And not any minor league game, training was pretty sharp.
He looked very sharp, yeah. I think probably feeling it out a little bit in the first just to make sure everything was good, but as he went along, pounded the strike zone. He looked just like he usually does, so very, very good outing.
Can you see Jaron sort of maybe turning a corner here a little bit?
Feels that way. Feels that way. Certainly over the last handful of games, he's starting to square more balls up. He's knocking runs in, so, you know, it's obviously been up and down for him, but we all know what he's capable of when he gets going, and if he gets going and it adds that dynamic to the lineup, it's going to be really fun to watch. So, but it definitely feels that way, the at-bat quality.
Chad, you talked a lot going into the break and coming out of it about this homestand, having to play better at Fenway, having to continue winning. Would you consider this kind of like a statement-making homestand?
It was important. Like you said, we talked about it before the break, and we knew it was going to be a long homestand, a lot of games in a place where we hadn't done as well as we needed to. That coupled with the winning streak and all that, and, you know, we did everything and then some to win these games and have a really, really good homestand before we go back on the road. So they did a fantastic job, and now we got to keep going.
Did today feel like you needed to cap it off the right way instead of going on the road and losing three or four?
Excuse me. It always feels that way, you know, like you always, every game you want to win. If we would have lost the game today, I would have sat here just like I have with you guys and said, next game, get ready for tomorrow. You know, that's how this thing goes. So, but obviously it feels a lot better to cap the homestand that way and know you're getting on a plane and you've had a really, really good homestand. So, again, they did an amazing job.
You have a roster move from deep?
Not yet.
What were the vibes like today, obviously, after the trade? I know you talked about this morning, but still, now that you've gotten through it, was there any difference? Or
I would say mixed emotions, like in the sense that, like, Connelly Early is loved around here. He's an amazing kid. He's a good pitcher. So, and he's, you know, friends with a lot of guys in there. So, like, that part of it's hard. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, you could feel the vibes in the sense that guys feel like we went out and did something to try to make our club better as far as, you know, adding a bat in the lineup. So I think there was excitement about that, you know, that we're going. So, but it's mixed. It's mixed emotions because you know it helps the team, at least, you know, right now. But also you see somebody that you really like walking out the door. That's always going to be that way. But, you know, we got to keep playing, and we'll welcome him with open arms, Curtis, when he's here, and get him involved and get him a part of this group.
You talked about identity quite a bit during this run. Just the building runs, creating runs the way you have to do, the way you did again today. How much has that become something the guys are just accustomed to now?
Oh, to answer that, I'll let you know that two of those they did on their own. Yeah. So, you know, there was one that I called, and two of those were players that now see and they recognize situations where, you know, this can move guys up, and I'm going to go ahead and get that job done. And so I think when you start to see things like that happening, it's like there's certain situations where I'm like, let them swing here, and they do it on their own. They're clicking on that, and they recognize what's in front of them and what needs to be done.
Let's sort of, you know, to have three bunts in a game at Fenway, you know, in this era is something of an anomaly, right?
I mean,
people don't play for the one-run inning anymore, but yeah. It seems to have worked for you, particularly here, over the last few weeks, the number of sacrifices that have led to scoring chances.
Yeah, I think for our guys, when you watch the formula of the team, I think they're also very, I mean, we can really pitch, and I think they're very well aware of who's up in the bullpen, and they're very well aware of, even at Fenway, like, what we have the ability to run out on the mound from the fifth sometimes if we need to, all the way to the end of the game. And I think our guys recognize that, you know, we have a good pitching staff and we have a really good bullpen, and it's maybe not going to work every time, but it's working an awful lot of the time. So they see that and they recognize that. And when you have pitching, like we can pitch and you can lock some things down at the back end of the bullpen, they play to that.
Yeah, this is a team that's found its manager, right? I almost kind of feel funny thinking like this guy's really still the interim manager. Like, how are you the interim manager and then going to go back to where they just retired you and put there in their Hall of Fame, right? Like Chad Tracy's the manager moving forward, right? I mean, like, you don't get put into the Worcester Hall of Fame and then get called back down, right? Like, that's a mini fall from grace. Now, granted, I didn't see this coming, but I could see the pathway for this on the way. Why? Because A, Tracy had known a lot of these guys, and it wasn't going to need a whole lot of time to learn the personalities of these guys and so forth. Two, if he's in alignment with management, this is the first time you're going to have it, because if it was Cora versus Bloom, then Cora and Breslow, Cora and upstairs. So now you have everybody who's kind of on the same path and the same track. So this is the thing that I actually could not believe. Look, they're 21-3 since the Yankee series. Today, they grounded into their eighth double play over 24 games. Think about that. As many times as rallies were killed or someone grounding into a 4-5-3 double play, you know what I'm talking about. This team has only grounded into eight double plays in the last month. This is where the bad luck is going. This is where, from playing the small ball, this is what happens when you move guys over to second and third. You don't have to worry about guys trying to force their way into the stat sheet, hoping that they could play hero ball, when all I need you to do is just get this person from station C to D, right? Or A to B, C to D, the same thing. I mean, think about it. You've got, what, at least two guys in the lineup that are hitting in below 200, but still are effective at what they need to do. Navarez puts the bunt down, moves over second and third, and that's what kind of breaks it open later in the game. Jared Duran is, that, you know, like you just heard Chad Tracy, like, is he starting to find some things? Look, a hitting coach I am not, but I do wonder if there's just one too many extra movements from Duran before he steps to approach the pitch. I don't know, but if he can get himself back into maybe the belief system that he had a couple years ago, and this comes down the road, you know, you don't have the pressure of trying to be the leadoff guy. No one is kicking and screaming for you to be that guy anymore. Just be consistent, show up when it needs to happen, and things still can happen. You saw what type of month of May he had. Maybe he's due for one. And I think that's the other thing, as we start to get into August, who's going to step up to that next level of showing that they're now ready for the prime time coming, that's going to be August, September, and into October. 617-779-7937. That's also the text line. KJ Show, thank you so much for hanging out. Look, we're going to get into the Jason Tatum conversation in terms of, I'll play it, I'll tell you what he said verbatim. I've got to get to that, because where I thought the story was dissipating, but I think a series of events has now got this Tatum and Brown story going in a different avenue. That's next here on WEEI. That's in 2 minutes.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of The KJ Show with KJ Carson on WEEI.
1-0. Durant swings and lines it into right center field. A base hit. Contreras scores from third. Durbin's on his heels without a throw. Jaren Duran delivers. 3-0 Red Sox in the fourth.
KJ Show, WEEI, 617-779-7937. The story of the summer is the Red Sox. No, this is not a tape from 3 years ago. This is actually happening right now. Sox now 54-50 on their way to play the Sacramento A's for a four-game series. Sacramento has just completely fallen apart. Shane Langelier is out for the rest of the season. I think it would tore either MCL or ACL.
Meniscus.
So something right there in the knee. So you're going into a situation where, look, you've won six straight series. You have to believe you need to go in there and win a seventh straight series. Be really good to get some hot playing baseball going. I will say this about the Connolly early deal. While I know personally it's probably tough to see a likable guy go, but you do have to remember that this was a team that was not likable 6 weeks ago. And 6 weeks ago, you'd be like, hey, don't get rid of Early. He's the future. You didn't see Jake Bennett suddenly coming out and becoming the reincarnation of Steve Carlton, you know, going out there, throwing five pitches an inning and wiping. You didn't see this coming. So change sometimes can be difficult, but it's a move for right now. And you have to believe there's so many. Keep in mind, there's no Crochet. And the team is heavy with left-handers. Tolley's another energy guy that maybe you probably thought Early was ahead of him going into the season. Things have changed. You did get Ranger Suarez. Things have changed. I still think that probably before Breslow is done, there's probably going to be another right-handed arm that's going to be that he's after. I think there's another pitcher still in the mix of things. All right, in minutes I'll get to the Celtics conversation, but let's get to Jeff in New Hampshire talking Red Sox. Jeff, thanks so much for calling WEEI. You're on the KJ Show.
Hi, KJ. Really enjoy your show tremendously.
Thank you.
So I wanted two things. Number one, you just alluded to it, that the Red Sox were a very unlikable team a while ago. And one of the people that people, one of the players that people say they dislike the most is Jaren Duran. And he's like one of my favorite players. And I do not understand why he gets such a bad rap. He's intense beyond control at times. I get that. But that's what you want in a player. And I'm like, I just don't understand how people don't appreciate the level of effort he gives, number one. Number two, and if you could speak to both of these, it'd be great. And sure. Number two, the position, I don't think the trade with Early and Amid is their final drop, right? And so with all that being said, not necessarily the player, but what position do you think they're most in need of shoring up? I think it's a catcher. And everyone's talking about shortstop. And I'm like, why would you go get another shortstop when you have Arias in the farm system? It doesn't make any sense. Anyways, love your show. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks, Jeff. I'll work backwards then. I'll work from question B and then to question A. The position... You know, initially we thought was like, go get an outfielder who could play DH as well. Now you're like, okay, where is Roman Anthony in his recovery? You really don't want to put Yoshida out there to play the field if you don't have to. So you're okay with Yoshida at least being your left-handed DH guy. I think that's why Duran also stays around as well. But if Duran is part of a deal, then that tells me that Roman Anthony is much closer to returning, but I don't think there's any signs that show that happening immediately. So that's why I think Duran stays, because he's your left fielder right now that can field the position effectively, all right? So is there a position? I don't know so much as it is there a person who could DH and then share that with Yoshida, right? And I honestly would have thought at some point maybe it's someone who could kind of rotate with Contreras, give Contreras a day off at first and let Contreras DH, and a guy that plays first. I think by the acquisition of Meade, he's a third baseman, but he's going to play second. Trevor Story's recovering. Yes, I know you don't want to hear that name. I totally understand. Trish. They're just giving him a lot of money to be here, so he's going to be back in the mix at some point. So I don't think anything in the infield is the question. I think it's just a matter of, does the person DH or is the person an additional outfielder? If an outfielder is traded in something else that's coming down the pike, good on Craig Breslow to make the statement that the team are buyers, so nobody over these next few days leading up to August 3rd can say, what are they doing? Okay, they've done something. To the first question, why does Duran get so much heat? And I think you have to realize one of the impressive things about New England is you can be smart about life and its sports at the same time, and sometimes they cross-intersect. And I think what Duran is, his incidences have cross-pollinated across different ideologies beyond sports. So that's why some people who don't like Duran probably don't follow the team as much as some of the things that have shown up in the news. And I think that happens. It's part of the overall society. I think a very smart way to answer that question. Let's go to Glenn in New Orleans. I got good news for Glenn once we finish talking about the Meade trade. Glenn, thanks for calling the KJ Show. You're on WEEI.
Hey, how you doing today?
Excellent.
It's a good win. Personally, I'd like him to see him get some bullpen help. I know that it's been good, but I still question why certain Watson. I'd like to see him try to get a Morihan or a Luke Weaver. As far as the trade goes, I'm an early supporter. I liked the guy the very first time I saw him pitch last year. And if you remember when we played Washington a month ago, early tossed 4 scoreless innings and left with a 1-0 lead because of his elbow. And the next night, Pulley got hit for 6 runs in 3 innings. Hmm. Early is the better pitcher. Pulley right now is just a hard thrower, and that lasts for maybe 3 to 4 innings, and then this velo starts dropping, and then he's got nothing else to attack the batters with. So, I mean, I understand what they did, but, man, I worry about this guy, Meade. This could be his career year. He could be another Duran, you know, an all-star caliber player 1 year and nothing close to that following. But anyway, that's my thoughts. Enjoy your show.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Well, I now have 2 pieces of good news for him. Zach is not feeling the Curtis Meade hate already. So
no, the Peyton Toley.
Well. So here's the thing. Well, one, Glenn, great news. Starting September 1st, you got SiriusXM. You want to drive around New Orleans? You can hear us on SiriusXM in real time. That's coming September 1st. And also, by the way, and Zach knows this, I literally am going to play some Dr. John as my bumper rejoin music before I get out of here. And that's before Glenn called for New Orleans. Have some crawfish on me, baby. Yeah, I can't. Here's where I can kind of get in Breslow's head of why you say yes to early now than 6 weeks ago. What is the situation with the elbow? Is it worse than it's being led on? Now, Early, whose specialty is playing everything low to the zone, right? Like, he gets the ball up. It's not going to have the velocity. It could be a problem. But he can trick you going low. Like, if you see the greatness in Early, which I totally understand, this guy could be Tom Glavine-esque as he becomes a more refined and better pitcher. But if Breslow knows that there's something with the elbow that's going to take a considerable amount of time, more than that's going to allow you to get back this year, I need to get something for this year right now because that is the edict on me. And this is probably also John Henry saying, if we're going to buy early. Kennedy and John Henry, like, look, they had to feel good with the 15-game streak. Like, when you start looking at the pantheon of history, if you told me earlier this season that the Red Sox were going to set something historical for this team, you know what it was going to be? Those people were terrible.
Good and terrible.
They're good. They're no longer terrible. They're good. So now I think it's an edict to say, if you're going to buy, start doing this early. And who is the player that you know? This is what I've been saying about with the buy-sell thing. People can just say what you want to get. I swear a lot of fans sound like these Europeans when they talk about transfer window. Go spend all this money to go get this forward. You can do that sometimes with baseball, except for you have to trade something back. You know people are not going to take Yoshida's bloated contract. They're watching Duran do the same 198. You know, they're seeing these same things. Trevor Story and what he hasn't done for 5 years. They all see this. So when you're the Sox and you get on the phone, what name is coming out of your mouth that another team says yes to? It's probably going to be pitching first, and then from there you have to determine what the pecking order is. So as much as we enjoy early and we can see what he could potentially be down the road, we don't know what you're going to get from him now with the elbow situation. And if you're Breslow, you have – that's why he said it's not about winning the trade. It's about making the team better. So if you know you can go get a bat –
that's going to help right now versus a pitcher who you don't know when they're coming back and can't help you right now, sometimes you have to make that tough move. 617-779-7937, KJ Show. All right, in 2 minutes, I'll play the Jason Tatum comments. I'll read them back to you because they're kind of grainy, and go back into something that I was telling you at the beginning of this month. That's next in 2 minutes here on WEEI's KJ Show.
How We Met Your Mother is the How I Met Your Mother rewatch podcast with me, Josh Radner, and series co-creator Craig Thomas. Follow How We Met Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The KJ Show with KJ Carson on WEEI.
Being a leader doesn't mean you know it all, right? I don't know it all. I'll be the first person to say that. Being a leader is being comfortable with raising your hand like, Michelle, I don't know. Can you explain that to me? I don't know X, Y, and Z. I want to learn, right? Somebody, being around somebody that feels like they know it all, I don't want to be around that person, right? I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I want to learn from somebody else.
Wow. What are the darker Rolling Stones songs is Can You Hear Me Knockin'? And that so fits to what's happened in the last 24 hours regarding the Tatum-Brown saga, which I thought was over because of the win streak. It's the KJ Show, WEEI, 617-779-7937. Like, thankfully, when the Red Sox streak started, you're like, you know what? This is really needed. There's a lot of emotion going on between Jaylen Brown being traded to the Sixers and what was going on in that 42-minute hubbubaloo of a hummada between Brad and Bill. It distracted everything. And then this comes yesterday. If you didn't hear what Tatum said, here's what the quote said, and this just has me flabbergasted. Now, the first part is good for the kids he's talking to in St. Louis. Tatum, quote, being a leader doesn't mean you know it all, right? I don't know it all. I would be the first person to say that. Being a leader is being comfortable with raising your hand like, I don't know. Can you explain that to me? I don't know X, Y, and Z. I want to learn, right? Somebody being around somebody that feels like they know it all or something. I don't want to be around that person. I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. I want to learn from somebody else. That's Jason Tatum at a Jason Tatum Foundation event yesterday in St. Louis. I think we've discovered who the mole is in all the things that went left. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Exhibit A, Jason Tatum. Here's the problem, brother. Why would you say verbatim the thing that the media was saying, that Jaylen Brown had a disease and thinks he's the smartest in the room? Oh, my God. You literally use the same terminology. I don't know if you watch these shows like Forensic Files and stuff like that, but I was watching this one episode, I think it was yesterday, where this dude wore a size 13 shoe, and it was an Adidas shoe, and stepped on a tomato, but because it had this specific design, it was the guy, because you could tell by the bottom of his shoe, he's the one that stepped in the tomato in the woman's yard that he ended up killing. Like, Tatum just stepped on the tomato in the woman's yard by saying, I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. Or being around somebody that feels like they know it all or something, I don't want to be around that person. I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. Come on. Here's some of the series of events that I feel wrong about what I think I'm right, and I've said them right here on 93.7 WEEI. First, on July 3rd, John Lines and I finished our show at 4 p.m. By that time, it had been almost 48 hours since Jaylen Brown had been traded and Jason Tatum had said nothing at all. At 4:07, a tweet went out, or an Instagram post went out, where Jason Tatum, over a graphic, put white letters that you couldn't read. You're like, what are you, what is, what? Zach, call me conspiracy theorist, but you know what? They fired Alex Cora 15 minutes after I got off the air on Saturday that night. Then, Jason Tatum. After, so at the time I defended Tatum, I said, you know what? Maybe if you had just not waited to say anything, because shortly after that, if you remember the Yo Gotti Instagram post where he's in a boxing ring, I'm like, who are you fighting? We're fighting now? I said, you know what? If you had waited until after Brad and Bill gave their press conference, then that's fine. If you had stayed static, cool. So what happens the day after the press conference? He's on Good Morning America pushing his children's book, the second one. And for 5 minutes during the interview, not once was the name Jaylen Brown or Boston Celtics said during... You're on Good Morning America for 5 minutes, and you can't say, you know, hey, look, changes are happening. My partner in crime just got traded. I can't wait to bust you for 50, but thank you for the years we had together. We won a chip together. We did it. And you can leave it at that, and nobody would bother you anything else. But in front of the kids yesterday, in front of the damn kids, quote, being around somebody that feels like they know it all or something, I don't want to be around that person. I don't want to be the smartest person in the room. Oh, why? We have defended your relationship with this guy. We now go back to the article from Clutch Points dated July 3rd. That's right, because John and I were on the air when the article had come down, and in that last hour we were discussing it. Okay, and it is from, what, guys, give me 2 seconds here, from Brett Siegel, okay? And in the article, because I remember seeing this, I said, whoa, this is a bit strange, and I'm going to read straight from the article. It's not plagiarism. It's called Getting It Correctism. From the article, while discussing the fallout of this trade with three different rival team sources, each whose organization spoke with the Celtics over the last 2 weeks regarding a potential Brown trade, one common theme stood out. Between his ventures in streaming, which began over the last year, and describing the 25-26 season as, quote, the most fun season of his career, one that he spent vast majority of playing without Tatum by his side, sources said, multiple members of the Celtics front office became frustrated with Brown's passive-aggressive behavior and slight under-the-radar jabs in his own comments on these streams. I'm going to pause that thought for a second, because now go back to when Brown said, hey, Brad and I are having conversations. You know, it does come out that there are other teams that come up, and Brown doesn't want to go to those places, because if you're under this guise of, oh, he just wanted to be the number one of his team, you don't think he could have gone to Charlotte? You know a bad situation when you see one. Okay, back to the article. These rival team sources who spoke with Clutch Points even went as far as to say, as members of Tatum's camp had expressed externally to other in league circles, that they were not happy with Brown's demeanor and his angle of claiming that this was the season he enjoyed the most with the Celtics, especially since Tatum did not play until March. This, at the time, I said, your people are potentially talking to other circles of people in NBA circles, and you're under contract? I like you guys, man. I really do. I really like Tatum. I like you guys. I do. But this is getting uglier by the moment. And it doesn't have to be. I saw you on Good Morning America. I was like, it'd take 10 seconds to say we won a chip. I'm going to bust you for 50. I can't wait for this rivalry to take off. I'm going to own you. We would have loved that. We would have understood. We would have known it would have been in the care, and you would have fed the fan base, who I need to have a word with right now. If you tell yourself that he wasn't referring to Jaylen Brown right there, you fall under the good and terrible. Good fan, terrible not picking this stuff up. And I'm seeing some people right now, because I watch social more than I write in it, because when you write, that's when the bots come out and start calling me all these different type of things and so forth, and realize that I love everybody, sometimes a little more than what you would want me to love them like, you know? No, you shouldn't go to the prom with him. They are now folks who are willing to ignore the obvious so that way they could still have access. You want a situation that has nothing to do with the NBA? Did you know that Kyle Shanahan was in a car accident 2 weeks ago? No, they just released it out yesterday, and now there are reports saying that, hey, some of reporters agreed to not put that out there. It's just a car accident. It wasn't a DUI. It wasn't a fault situation. It was something that happened on a public road, and people decided because they want to protect their access. Stop it. Get out. Get out of this if that's what it is. Pay full price for a ticket if you need to. Tell your friends no. I just had to tell a friend of mine no, Zach. You might not know this. They're like, yeah, they need a ticket to the Kid Capri white party. I'm like, I'm not going, so I'm not looking for the ticket. Pay full price. Like, if you're worried about your access and you're willing to not look at what is right in your face, get out of this. Get out of this. You could be a fan paying full price. Buy the ticket. Buy the ticket. Because this Homer stuff, when it, especially in the situation with Brown and Tatum, where things quieted down, you didn't hear anything from Brown. Someone even put out a fake Instagram post from Brown that wasn't even true yesterday. This is all tied into LeBron going to Philadelphia. This is what this is about. Like, suddenly, they are the conversation. And I hear people telling me, like, all this different stuff. Oh, they're going to be horrible. How did they share the ball? I'm like, no, here's the real issue that you need to tell yourself if you're a fan of this team just like I am. The 76ers have five legitimate people who can close out a game. The Celtics have 1.5. That's an issue. If you want it broken down, if the guards are busting the asses from the 76ers are doing it, it doesn't stop. The guards are going to dominate you. If the power forward is too slow to stop LeBron on the dribble drive, you have no chance. If there's no rim protection, listen to this, Joe Mazzulla, Embiid eats until you stop him. And if Jaylen Brown has a weak defender on him, he will eat him up in the mid-range and defend your best player who's at the 1, 2, or 3 position. This is why you should be mad. Because what just... How did they get to stack a team like that?
Trash!
And you're going to tell me, oh, well, you eat up 70%. 70% is still being eaten up. And yet you got these fans who are just sitting there hugging tighter than a diaper. When you clearly can tell that Tatum is taking a shot at Brown in those comments. Why? Because the cadence is the same that Cowherd put out there. So now if you're doing the same cadence, either you fed it or you're now regurgitating it. And one is just as bad. It's like at one point, like if you were the driver of the getaway car for a bank robbery, like you could argue like, well, I didn't rob the bank. Those things have changed now. You're a bank robber too. So when you get into bed with even those thoughts and it's even posted to your foundation Instagram page, I have to ask, what is going on? What is happening? Does Tatum realize that potentially when it comes to his negotiation, when it's coming, when he wants his money, that they may point to him and say, you know what? The guy we got rid of got us to the second seed in the Eastern Conference with a bunch of unpaid guys. I'd feel some type of way if I was Jason Tatum while everybody is talking about Philly. And you're like, we just re-signed Jordan Walsh. No, I'm just kidding. He's deserved it. He's worked hard. I like him. But yeah. Are we falling back into the, remember the Tatum who was concerned more about his stats? I'm a 27-7-7 guy. Why is that not? Do you know what his usage rate is probably going to be this year? It's probably going to be somewhere around 36%. Absolutely crazy. He might have a usage rate of 36%. The championship year, Tatum was 30.2. Brown was 28.9. Luka led the league last year at 38%. Brown 36%. Wemby at 32.4. Tatum's usage rate is not going to be anything less than 34. Are you like, well, you've got White and Pritchard. Yeah, championship year, they were 18-17. Last year, White and Pritchard, 22-21. It's going to be a tough season to watch. It may be enjoyable for putting people in the seats and playing Geno time. But it's going to be tough, and it's just really tough to hear those words come out of Jason Tatum's mouth yesterday at camp. And I'm saying that because I pay for my tickets. I pay for my tickets.
Yeah, boy.
Next, Patriots camp. And something I found fascinating that I think is good for the team, but it goes back to something I had mentioned a couple years ago. That's next here on WEEI's KJ Show.
This is the KJ Show with KJ Carson on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
We love Christian Gonzalez. We love him as a player, as a person. You know, that's why we've made an offer to him that makes him the highest paid player ever to play that position in the NFL. And coincidentally, it's the highest contract in the Patriots franchise history. So we're glad we drafted him and he's developed here and we hope he'll be with us for a long time.
KJ Show, WEEI, 617-779-7937. Thank you so much for hanging out. If you missed any of the show, the Odyssey app is free. Gosh, the Red Sox and so many things. I just not enough time to get to everything. Zach Coe, thank you for everything you've done today. Anytime I hear Robert Kraft mention something that's a statement that still has kind of an open-ended to itness, I always think of how Belichick had to sit down during the Dynasty series on Apple, literally still as a paid employee of the Patriots, discussing his own demise. Like Robert Kraft, a super gangster. I mean, after all, he is playing Outkast out there, so he's playing rap music and a bunch of family and friends. No, but yeah. So when he says Christian Gonzalez has just been offered the most money in the history of this franchise, and it would make him the highest paid player in football for the position, and you're like, the first thing inside your head, you're like, yeah, but for how long? What's the terms? And because that's why you haven't heard the deal done just yet, it's all about the terms. And here's where I give Kraft a lot of credit as well, is, okay, you make that statement. Now, Christian, are we going to play the, we sick, boss. I got to miss a couple of games to start the season. They put the money out in front of you, and they don't have to do the deal right now. I've just been a firm believer that the Patriots can kind of hold their water on Gonzalez until next year, because let's just say A.J. Brown does not pan out to what you believe the cost should be moving forward. First thing, you'd be like, Gonzalez, here's your contract. Drake, here's your contract. Both can smile together, because that's the big fish that's still waiting in the ocean. That's the orca whale, is how much is Drake May's contract going to be? And you won't be able to try and do the fifth-year extension. You do not want to have that type of chaos with your quarterback, who you know is the quarterback of the future. Your cornerback, who's one of the top three for sure, top five, maybe even too big of a number. But I think what they're kind of playing is, and even going back to some of these reports from about a week and a half ago, about like, yeah, I don't think of him when it comes to tackling. Those are little small ways to kind of leak things, saying that we're not going to make this as easy for you. And these other small things we're going to bring up. So when you talk about don't get me wrong. You put the ball in the air against Gonzalez, there's a very good chance the quarterback is in trouble. Deflection, the ball's probably not going to be caught. And that is a skill that very few in the NFL have on a consistent basis. So that's why Gonzalez definitely needs to be one of the highest paid guys. I guess the question is, what are the terms and what are the conditions? And that's where everything is being hung up on, because it's kind of like, I mean, does Gonzalez say, well, you know what, man, you know, well, if we can't get a deal done, well, all Kraft has to say is, well, we offered him the most money. We're about to make him the highest paid. You think the fan base is going to sympathize with anybody, say, yeah, but it's over, it's for 5 years and not three. I don't know if people pick this up, but nobody in the public general fan base cares whether you're hundreds of millions, you're tens of millions, or spread out over 3 years or 5 years. They just tell you, I don't make that type of money at my job. Gabe Yakis, I think he took advantage of kind of like what was kind of societally going on at that time. His age probably like, yeah, coach is distracted. You could kind of wait this out, but he's signed. Shout out to Vrabel bringing a dog to the podium, because it's much harder to tame a cat in front of a microphone. That's all I'm saying. Does he bring the dog out? Zach, does he bring a dog out every week? Does he?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. Like, let's say the Patriots start 3-3, and people are kind of like, what in the hell is going on around here? Do you bring the puppy back out again?
You almost have to.
You almost have to, right? This is like, look, my minor psychology, but I wouldn't tell you that I'm a doctor or even I help friends. I just don't charge them, right? That's where my psychology degree goes. But the little small things almost say, that's a PR move there. Because I'm trying to think, in the history of Mike Vrabel being a head coach in the NFL, did I ever see him bring a dog to the podium before? Never. I can never think of a time. Because they would be comparing the different type of dogs he's held. So now it's almost kind of like, distraction. I'm just saying, team goes 3-3.
And even they did that bring adoption. Two dogs.
Yes.
They did that adoption event last year because Andy Borregalis ended up adopting his dog, but Vrabel didn't bring one to the podium. So that was a new thing this year.
Like I said, much easier to bring a dog to the podium than it is to have a cat. I'm just saying. I think that's the reason why this show only comes on once a week. It's either just absolutely horrible or it's absolutely just kind of like fascinating Dr. Funkenstein, George Clinton, Parliament, Funkadelic level. I would go with the latter. Before I get out of here, because I've only got 2 more minutes, but I've got to play this because I want to show you the difference between fandom and familiarity. Can you play the cut from the Greg Hill show labeled Wiggy on GHS?
This is the Tom that I remember, like the guy that would hang out, have a good time, you know.
But he wasn't Tom then.
No, but this is who he is. And then he got to a level where he had to change for people. When he's slapping Logan Paul and he's giving him the bird, that seems like the Tom Brady that I remember.
That
looks nothing like any. He looks so fake doing
very
it.
Interesting. Wiggy.
I'm
Wiggy.
Talking about when you hang out with the guy.
No, but have you seen the video of him doing this?
Yes.
Does he look organic or does he look totally fake?
I think when I saw him giving the bird at the soccer game, that's the Tom that I know.
Okay. What you just heard there, folks, from the Greg Hill show, I think that was Monday because I was doing my walk and I heard that. I was like, it's fascinating, is Wiggy is showing you what the familiar is. Like, I know the guy. Curtis is showing you the fandom of I've watched the guy. You can even hear Greg saying, that's really fascinating because there's some storytelling in there. That's why Wiggy, like, it's about Tom Brady and his involvement with WWE. And in essence, Wiggy was saying it was extending the brand. And he was just like, yeah, what he did with Logan Paul in terms of giving the finger at the World Cup, that's the Tom I know. And it's like, it's almost like, hey, just because everybody has on tuxedos at the prom doesn't mean that everybody's going to be as clean as their tuxedo by time the night is over, if you know what I mean. You know, so shout out to my man Jermaine Wiggins for reminding sometime us fans that when you're more familiar with the person, you have an insight that most of us have only watched through a controlled lens. Zach Coe, thank you so much for all your work today, man. Doing double duty from Zach in the back to Zach in the front. This dude is like driving like manless cars. I thank you so much. Have a great Sunday. Talk to you again next week, Saturday, here on WEEI.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.